Welcome to another episode of the By His Grace podcast. I am your host, Misty Phillip, and I am delighted to introduce to you Pastor Daniel Grothy of the New Life Church in Colorado. He is a husband and a father and a chaser of wisdom. And so, Daniel, welcome to the podcast today.
Thank you, Misty. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so we are going to focus our conversation around pursuing wisdom in a chaotic world, because as we record this, you pastor a congregation of about 13,000 people, and we are in the beginning stages of the corona outbreak in our country, and things are pretty chaotic, and I think it is a great time for your upcoming book to release next month on Chasing Wisdom. So welcome. So what prompted you to write this book, Chasing Wisdom?
Yeah, my parents have always had me around wise saints. They took me into nursing homes when I was a kid, 5, 6, 7 years old, and they would pull into the parking lot and they would turn around to the back seat and look at us and they would say, "All right, kids, me and my 3 sisters, you're going to go in here, and these are people who have lived. These are people who have traveled. These are people who have been in wars. These are people who have been through the Great Depression. These are the people who have worked farms and ranches, and they've got so many stories. And if you don't ask good questions, you'll miss out on the wisdom that they have. So go in, shake their hand, look them in the eyes, and ask them what their name is. And then here are some prompts. Here's how you ask questions. Here's how you draw out of them the wisdom that they have fought to gain over 80 or 90 years. And so I thought every 5-year-old was going into nursing homes once a week. I thought that was normal. And so I'd go and I'd meet Mr. Charles or I'd meet Miss Velma, and we would wheel them down in their wheelchairs to the fellowship hall, and my dad would play hymns and we'd bring them cookies and just talk. And my mom or dad would come over and teach us how to sort of prime the pump, find out the wisdom that they have. And so I wrote this book because I've grown up with that my whole life, but also because of experiences that I've faced. When I was a young pastor here at New Life, I came in and we were just thriving as a church. Our pastor was the president of the National Association of Evangelicals, a 30 million member group. And our church was on the scene. Mel Gibson, when he released The Passion of the Christ, he came to our church in Colorado Springs to release it to 3,000 pastors. Barbara Walters and Tom Brokaw, and all, we were on the front pages of every newspaper, every media outlet, for all the right reasons. And then about 18 months into that, our pastor was found to be in a scandal, in a moral failure. And then we were on the front pages for all the wrong reasons. And embarrassment, shame, 30% of our church left almost overnight with 40% of the budget with them. So the bottom falls out at our church. We had to fire 44 people overnight, which was a heartbreak, watching your friends have to leave. And then we got a new senior pastor about 10 months later, and we were starting to rebuild trust and grow and really believe the Lord again that there was a future for us. And on his 100th day in the office, we just finished 2 Sunday morning services. It's 1 o'clock, and I'm standing down at the end of our children's hallway, and all of a sudden I hear bop, 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 bop. A shooter comes on our campus with an AR-15 assault rifle and 1,000 rounds of ammunition and starts spraying bullets everywhere. He had killed 2 teenage girls in the parking lot and shot their dad up, who went into emergency surgery, 16 and 18-year-old girl, you know, just dead in our parking lot. And he runs in the building, this guy, and he's shooting down our children's hallway. I mean, imagine parents with little kids diving under desks and running into bathrooms. And here he is just spraying randomly. And I run into our senior pastor's office and say, "There's a shooter on campus." And a security guard, a brave lady runs out and with a pistol and shoots him in the leg and stops him. And he takes his life in the children's hallway. So here we've got a double murder suicide on our campus. 13 months after we lost our senior pastor and, you know, the economy tanked. So here we are, I'm a young 25-year-old pastor, been through all this, and it's just like a gut punch. You can't get your breath. Like, when is it going to stop? And I was walking through Goodwill one day, and I went to the used books, and I saw this book, The Contemplative Pastor. And I thought, that's interesting. So I pull it off the shelf. It's 99 cents and it says Eugene H. Peterson. And I thought, I think that's the guy who translated the Message Bible. So I bought it, took it home that day, my Monday day off. And I never do this, but I read the entire book that day, 171 pages, I think it was. And I was spellbound. I thought, there it is, the life of pastoral ministry that I know I've been made to live. That's what it looks like. So I wrote Eugene a letter and I said, Eugene, at least hear me saying thank you. I don't think you'll be able to meet with me, but could I spend a day with you? This book has awakened my heart. This book is changing my life. And I sent it to his publisher because I didn't know who Eugene was or where he lived or how old he was. I sent it to NAV Press and I said, if you could get this to Mr. Peterson, I'd be grateful. And I knew they wouldn't.
Right.
But they did. They did. And 2 weeks later, I go to the mailbox and there's a letter there. I pull it out in the top left corner. It says E. Peterson, kind of scrawled out in that chicken scratch, cursive that our grandparents have, E. Peterson, Lakeside, Montana, 59922. And I thought, oh my gosh. So he writes me back, Dear Daniel, yes, I'd be willing to spend a day with you here in Montana, but not so fast, period.
Ouch.
And I want you to write a three-page paper on what is pastor and a three-page paper on what is church to see if we even have enough common ground to begin a conversation. So from that moment on, it was ball game. It was game time. Let's do this. Let's rally. Here's a guy who's 75 years old at the time. He's loved the Lord. He's loved his wife. He's been faithful. His children honor him. He's at the end of his life, wholesome and vibrant, and I want to look like that. So this was the moment of beginning to chase wisdom with Eugene Peterson.
Wow, that is such an incredible story. And yeah, I read the beginning of your book and I was a little flabbergasted. And then once I started to pick it up and read it again, I consumed it all. It's really, really good. And I love the lessons that that you learned through your time with him as a pupil and a master, and also with the master, right? Because that's where it all begins. So what does the Bible say about where we find wisdom?
Yeah. I mean, it tells us to go chase our elders. Yeah, you young ones, if you have wisdom, if you need wisdom, James, ask of God who will give it graciously without finding fault. Solomon, wisdom is the primary thing. It's more to be desired than silver and gold, and nothing you desire compares with her. Chase it, pursue it. In all you're getting, get understanding. And so like this is everywhere. And in every ancient Near Eastern society, it's important to realize where our Bible comes from. It didn't just fall down out of the heavens. It was written by a people in a specific place and in a specific time. And every ancient Near Eastern society had what we would call the elders at the city gates. And these elders, they're wise. They've logged miles with God. They've paid attention to how life works. They've seen it all. And here they are in the latter years of their life at the town square waiting to be asked. So if you have a dispute you need adjudicated between your neighbor, you think your neighbor moved the ancient boundary stone onto your property that your great-great-great-great-great-grandfather gave you 700 years ago, and they're taking your precious property, you go to the elders at the city gates and you present your case and they listen and they talk amongst themselves and then they come back with their ruling. And what it does when it's working right is it preserves a peaceful society. And I think we live in a society that has told our elders to go off and play golf and go on vacations and take another cruise and frankly, just die. Your work here is done. You're 65. We don't need you anymore. And to that, I say garbage. They're 65. They have more free time than they've ever had before. They have more wisdom than they've ever had before, more experience than they've ever had before. Many of them have more disposable income to be able to be available to you than they have ever before. And these are their greatest years of strength. So it's not physical strength, but these are their greatest years of fruitfulness and reproductivity that they can bless the generations to come. And so as for me and my house, we're going to chase wisdom. We're going to pursue the wise older saints who've known the Lord and who've gotten to the end of their lives like Paul, and they can say, I've fought the good fight. I've run the race. I've kept the faith. And here you go. Here's my wisdom.
Right. And you also talk about not only the wisdom of our elders and the sages, but also the wisdom of reading dead people. So I classically educated my children. I homeschooled them. And then like my oldest son went to a liberal arts school where he was in the honors college and read all of the books that you mention in, you know, from Athanasius to just all of them, Jerome. So when he was in college, it was a lot of fun because I was still homeschooling the other kids. I couldn't read them, but I got to pick his brain and we got to have great conversations because there's so much wisdom there. And why is that? Why would you say that there's wisdom there in reading the dead people?
Because we can't know the verdict on our moment in time. We are living an experiment right now with social media, with our economy, with living in neighborhoods where we're distancing ourselves from people, driving into the garage and closing the garage door, not knowing our neighbors. Do you realize this has never been able to happen before in human history?
Yeah.
So we are living in the middle of an experiment and we don't know what future generations, we don't know what the verdict will be on us. So what we have to do is we have to go back. We have to have a long look at the narrative arc of humankind. We've got to be able to see the story and how it trends, the trajectories, what we've learned along the way. And you've heard the phrase, you know, the aphorism that if you don't know what's happened before, you're doomed to repeat it. Right. And so, but if you don't gain the wisdom of what's gone before you, you're leaving something on the table. So I think about St. Athanasius writing about his sage, St. Anthony. Mm-hmm. And St. Anthony was what many believe to be the first sort of desert father in Egypt. He was an orphan. His parents died when he was in his teenage years. And he goes out, he flees into the wilderness of Egypt. And it says of him, Athanasius writes his biography about St. Anthony. And it says that if there was a wise person that he heard of anywhere in any region, St. Anthony, like a bee going forth to find honey, would go out and he would find that person. He would see in what graces they excel. He would ask them really good questions. He would pay attention and he would try to inculcate into his life the wisdom that he found. So here he is, St. Anthony, in the late 200s in Egypt, in the desert, going out, asking good questions. So I think we've got to know the story. If we don't know where Brother Andrew comes from or Brother Lawrence comes from, if we don't know Teresa of Avila, if we don't know even, frankly, Mother Teresa in our own age, she's gone, but if we don't know that story, we are deprived. We may have deep pockets, but we'll have more impoverished souls. So I think we've got to pay attention to the long human story and read the dead people.
Yeah, that's so good. Also, one of the things that you talk about, and I'd like for you to explain it for us, is how to read the scriptures sacramentally. So first of all, what is a sacrament for those who may not know? And then how can we apply that to reading scripture?
Yeah, I think a sacrament, just in layman's terms, is grace hiding in plain sight. It's just right there. Think about the great sacraments of the church. You know, some traditions see seven sacraments, other traditions two. You know, you've got Eucharist and you've got water baptism. We don't need to argue that right now. That's not a big deal at the moment. Sacrament, grace is hiding in plain sight. Water baptism, the most common gift that God has given our earth, water. 70% of our earth is water. And God tells his people, and in Jesus steps down into the Jordan River and asks John the baptizer to dunk him under. Like, Jesus steps down into the water, and now Christians for the last 2,000 years have been following him into the waters of baptism. Well, it's the most common and ordinary and available resource right in front of us. And yet somehow the common becomes divine, that the Spirit of God broods over those waters, the baptismal waters, just as he did in Genesis 1 over the waters of chaos. And he brings us into death and up out of death and into resurrection life. I think that's what we see in a sacrament. Think about communion. You've got bread and wine or bread and juice. I mean, just common, ordinary meal for people 2,000 years ago. And Jesus takes the bread and he breaks it. This is my body, which is broken for you. And as often as you do this, like, I'm there, I'm going to show up. Don't look now, but the Spirit's at work. So sacrament is grace hiding in plain sight. And I think with the scriptures, you know, it's a book of words that writers thousands of years ago put together. So we could easily just go, oh yeah, this is kind of nice little cute wisdom or whatever. But the scriptures, we believe we can read them sacramentally because God has chosen to dwell there. God has chosen to be found through these words. Now, God could have chosen to be found in Sports Illustrated. God could have chosen to be found in the daily newspaper. You get up and read the paper and somehow I'm just going to show up in that moment. Well, maybe every once in a while that happens, but it always happens when I open the scriptures. I opened up Psalm 36 this morning and there's Jesus jumping off the page. And I don't know how he keeps doing it, but he does. So we read the scriptures sacramentally. It's these words in this book right in our hands, right in front of, but somehow the common words become divine. The Spirit inhabits these words and breathes life. And we've been saying for 2,000 years that the Word of God is living and active. It's sharper than any double-edged sword, and it pierces to the dividing between soul and spirit and joint and marrow. It's a discerner of the thoughts and the intents of our heart. So what we're saying when we say we can read the scripture sacramentally is that you keep putting yourself in front of this book, these common words that somehow become extraordinary by the Spirit of God, and they'll transform you and you'll find Jesus and he'll lead you into the way of everlasting life. So love the scriptures.
Yeah. I think especially now in the midst of our corona outbreak, when the world seems to be going crazy and is filled with fear, but in Timothy, it tells us not to have a spirit of fear, but to have power and love and a sound mind. But if we don't know those things, if we're not in the Word and meditating on those things, then we don't have those things to draw on when the difficult time comes. I was in Isaiah this morning, Isaiah 26, and it says, go into your house and hide yourself there. And I feel like for a time, that's what we have to do. Sure. But that doesn't mean that we stop being productive. We want to love on our neighbors. We want to make good decisions. We don't want to panic. All of those things. But we have to have that in us in order for us to draw on that.
We live out on some land, and I went out this morning early and got my Carhartt jacket on and my mud boots because it's muddy season out here. And I'm walking amongst the trees, and there's a little creek that runs through, and I'm listening to these birds just sing. I mean, it was unbelievably beautiful. There's a woodpecker in the background, you know, doing his thing, and there's a hawk flying overhead, and I did not see or hear one anxious bird. I promise you on everything. I didn't hear or see one anxious bird. And I'm out there reading Matthew 6, Jesus going, look at the birds of the air. They don't sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. And are you not worth more than 1,000 canaries? Like, it's going to be just fine. If you don't put those words in front of you and put yourself in God's creation, you'll start to think the world's collapsing in on you. But these words, when come to every single day, they somehow throw open the doors of reality. And you remember the truth. You go, oh, my great-great-great-grandparents made it, and they went through difficult times that I couldn't even imagine. And somehow I'm here. We're going to be fine. My grandkids that I don't even know are going to be fine. Settle down.
Yeah. Well, and something else I wanted to touch on, because of the way you opened this with the story, you talk about our culture of celebrity pastors. Yeah. And I am a podcaster and an author. I do a lot in the online space. I see a lot of people who are trying to get their messages out, their words out. There's just a culture of celebrity. And I don't think that is how we're supposed to live. I actually just hosted the first Christian podcast conference, and I brought all these Christians together to teach them how to podcast because I saw the influence that my podcast was having, that I'm reaching people around the world, and then I can share the gospel, share hope, share love. And I thought, if I can do that, what if I bring all these people together? What more can we do for the kingdom? But at the end, I got a standing ovation, and it made me so uncomfortable because we're not supposed to be the object of praise, that there's only one who's worthy. So I would love for you to speak into that a little bit.
Yeah, it's a dance. And I mean, we humans from time immemorial, we have been just think about Saul. Give us a king. We need someone that we can see. I love, God, that you're invisible and out there and you got words and all this stuff, but I can't see you. I need someone that I can, like, I can look at and look to, someone who can be my icon. And it says Saul, the people from the beginning, he stood a head taller than all the other people. He was handsome, very fine appearance. And these people go, there he is. That must be the guy, because he's beautiful and he's tall. And that's what leaders are, right? And God goes, look, do you know what you're going to be getting if you sign up for that? Like, let me just tell you the consequences. God always warns us. So there's that human desire to give us a king. But there's also this holy calling that you are stewarding your call. Like, God has given you gifts. God has given you graces. God has anointed you to tell his story to the world. And there's no shame in that. Do it. Do it with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And I love that you were uncomfortable with the standing ovation. Yeah. And I think if we ever get comfortable with that, if we ever start feeding off of that, if we ever start loving that and chasing that, that's the beginning of the end. That's our demise. And so I think one of the great sages in this book that I've quoted, he said, love to be unknown. Mm-hmm. And we don't live in a world that understands that. We don't live in a world that even knows what to do with that. But he knows. And this is the guy who wrote the book that's been sold, besides the Bible, the second most selling copies in the whole, you know, he never ever saw that. He never took a dime from it. 500 years after his death, here we are still reading the book. And he says, love to be unknown and esteemed as nothing. So I think in our world, you and I, what we're doing, look, we've written books, no shame. I got this book here. I want you to know about it. You've written your beautiful book and your podcasting. Do what God has made you to do, brothers and sisters, and then run away from it as often as you can and fall on your knees and cry out to the Lord in praise and tell him he alone is God. And when people try to give you accolades and pat you on the back, receive it, but don't fall in love with it, and then get the heck out of there and then fall back on your knees in God's presence and say, you alone are God. So it's this tenuous dance. It's delicate. And you know when you're on a slippery slope and you're ready to tip over into the madness. And so just fight it with all your soul. Do your work. Do it as unto the Lord. And then love to be unknown.
That is such good wisdom. And thank you so much for sharing, because I have a lot of author friends and podcasters that listen to this as well. So, I mean, that's a good word for anybody, but I think just the way you explained it is a tenuous dance. I think that is, it's beautiful and good wisdom. So thank you so much for joining me today on By His Grace. I love your book, Chasing Wisdom, and I encourage everybody to pick that up when it's released in April. When will it? Okay.
Yeah. And you can get it on Amazon, pre-order it now, or at any of your local bookstores after April 21st. Misty, you're a dream. Thank you so much. I love the podcast, and thanks for having me on today.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you for joining me today on By His Grace. I hope you've enjoyed listening and are encouraged by our guest today. I would love for you to visit my blog, mistyphillip.com, for more encouragement. You can find me on social media as Misty Philip, and I would love to connect with you there.